Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That would be me. Hi. How are you?
What, did you just come from the Carolinas?
I was in Virginia.
Well, you were in Charlottesville, so I guess there is a little bit of a accent there you'd come back with.
Not much. So, a lot of guys are day-to-day right now. Bill Belton, day-to-day. Derek Day, day-to-day. Donovan Smith.
I just thought that was funny.
That's true. But this is the NFL. I mean, that's the NFL compared to this. This is, you know, they can play that game all they want. Adrian Amos and Alex Kenny will continue on kickoff returns. Not happy, though, with the split safety coverage on third down coverage. So they got to do a better job on third and long. Teams right now are 65% against Penn State right now on third down and five or better. 65%. You know, anything under 25% is really good. All right? That's at 65. Too big. Our number, 1-800-795-9565, Lenape Solar Hotline. Tomorrow, we'll bring in the head football coach at Navy, Ken Amato-Tolo. He will join us on the show tomorrow at 3:35. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, covers the Big Ten, joins us on Thursday at 3:35. So we have plenty coming up here in the next couple of days with marquee guests to get you ready for the game. We'll also have Navy's play-by-play guy on Thursday as well. Keel Lynch in the mix for Saturday. Idealistically, Bill O'Brien would like to redshirt him. Also, they need to do a better job, obviously, in the red zone. Touchdowns, not field goals. If you're wondering about whether Ryan Kaiser is in danger as the holder in this, no. Ryan Kaiser is secure. They're taking a look at Emory Etter. They're taking a look at Michael Furman on snaps. That's Military Appreciation Week. P.J. Byers was in the media room today. Backup fullback. Wants to be a diver, a Navy diver. He and Brett Smith are the two guys in this team. Brett Smith, you haven't seen anything of. Brett Smith joined the team in preseason, who's had two tours of duty in Iraq. And then Byers is in the Navy ROTC program, wants to be a diver. So, it's and before the game on Saturday, P.J. Byers is going to lead the team out of the tunnel, by the way. I don't think they talked about this, but I'll tell everybody about it before you go. And he'll be carrying the American flag. So,
got a baseball question for you. if you can shift gears real quick.
Oh, come on. Go ahead.
Pittsburgh's lost four in a row now. Mm-hmm. And in danger.
They won't even get to 500.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. In danger of going sub 500, not to mention they're 2.5 out of the wild card right now. And is this the fall that you were waiting for?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, what did I say a month ago?
Well, we talked about the offense not being there.
But what did I say a month ago? When they were in the wild card lead, I said they weren't going to make the playoffs.
Yes, you did. But if they have a home game, I mean, let's see. I have to look at their schedule. If they finish a majority of their games at home, they may actually have a shot because they play very well at home.
Yes, they play very well at home. But see, again, what's happened in Pittsburgh? People in Pittsburgh don't even know how they're doing.
Well, that's because the Steelers run Sunday night football. But I'll tell you what, well, the Steelers play like that a little more often, and there might be some people caring.
Right. They are 2-8 in their last 10 games. I mean, right now, they're only four games over 500. And what they played so far, 72 games on the road. See, they've actually played more home games than road games right now.
Yeah, they have a set with 72-68. Yep, set with Cincinnati yet this week. Then the weekend series with the Cubs that goes four. Then they're home with the Brewers, on the road to Houston. They should be able to take two or three from Houston. Four with the Mets in New York. Then back to the Reds at home at the end of September. And then the Braves at home. So, I mean, at least they have the last week of the season there at home.
It doesn't. Look, they have a real problem. And they just don't have enough. They just don't have enough.
Yeah, but with the exception of the Cubs, I'm sorry, with the exception of the Reds and the rest of this series, and then another series with the Reds, they have the Cubs, Brewers, Astros,
mm-hmm.
and then end the season with the Braves and the Reds. I mean, those would be the toughest. I mean, the schedule, I think, is in their favor.
No, it's not.
Really? Why not?
It's the opposite.
Why? I mean, except for those last two series, what about the rest?
Brewers?
Yeah, I mean, they're five. They're about the same.
The Pirates do not play well against the Brewers. They don't match up well with the Brewers. I mean, they just went into Milwaukee, 2 weeks ago, and were beaten.
Trying to see how long ago that was. They lost two of three at the end in the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
And then lost. It looks like two more. Yeah, they lost all three at the end of that at the end of August. Then too, they lost two or three going into that, and then they lost.
Voila.
But they were all on the road too.
Doesn't matter. No, the two or three they lost to Milwaukee in August were Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they were at home. The three that they lost to the Brewers then at the end.
Yeah,
of that
they're
week.
They're 1-5 against Milwaukee the last six games they played. Let's see. Go back here. 1-5. Let's see. They are 2-7 against them in their last nine games.
Yeah, but still they have the Cubs, the Astros, and the Mets yet.
They have six games. They still have five games with Cincinnati. Five games with Cincinnati.
That's true. They do that.
They also have three games with the Atlanta Braves. Okay, that's eight games. Okay. In Milwaukee, they don't play well against. So that now we're up to 11 games.
All right. Now, Atlanta, they may not be able to shut down at the end of the season because of playing for the wild card. But Cincinnati could shut things down in that series over the 28th through the 30th in September.
You want me to play Aerosmith here?
Here we go again. I don't think you're referring to Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Nope, I'm referring to Dream On. This isn't good. I mean, I know they have four with the Cubs and they have three with the Astros. That's only seven games. The Mets are a swing thing either way. And the problem is the Mets series is at Citi Field.
That's true. It is on the road.
Okay. Sorry. I don't see 10 more wins. Now, do I want to be wrong? I mean, come on. I mean, do you think I'm rooting for them to go like this? I think they're going to be like 80 and 82 or 79 and 83. He's just not playing well enough. I mean, you look at this 2-8 stretch they're in right now. Okay, 2-8. Those two wins were at home in Houston. I mean, even Wandy Rodriguez won, for crying out loud. And they drew a whopping 27,000 for the two games. I mean, the Cubs just swept them, you know, at Wrigley. I mean, the Cubs just swept them, I should say, at PNC Park.
No, wait, when was that one?
September 7, 8, 9.
Oh, that's right. That was a PNC over the weekend, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that one being a home game.
Yeah.
And the one game was, what, 12-1, 12-2?
Yeah, that was against A.J. Burnett, the ace. Burnett became the first pitcher for the Pirates to win 15 games in a season since 1999. Okay? It was August 16th when they stopped the bleeding after the Dodgers took three in a row from him. You know how many games he has won since August 16th?
How many?
The race?
How many games?
Oh, take a wild guess.
None.
That's right. Zero.
That's a stunning statistic.
Well, I didn't mean to show up prepared. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Well,
in fact, the Pirates have lost his last four starts. They've lost all four of them. He's been the losing pitcher twice, but they've lost his last four starts, and he hasn't made it to the seventh inning in a game since August 5th.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but for National League Baseball, thank goodness that there's an extra wild card to discuss, because it's not setting up very well for division champions. I mean, if you're in the lead right now, you're at least the worst you could be is five games ahead.
Right.
Or that's the worst is five games. I mean, St. Louis or Cincinnati has a 9.5 game lead. Yep. Washington has a 6.5 game lead. I mean, thank goodness for the wild card. But the American League East, is it possible? I honestly don't know if the rule is against this or not. Is it possible that the wild card games could come out of the East?
Sure.
I mean, both the teams? Because you could potentially have three of five American League East teams in the playoffs.
Conceivably. But again, Oakland right now has a two-game lead on Baltimore.
Correct.
And they're three up on Tampa Bay. Oakland is the wild card leader. I mean, look at Oakland. I mean, Oakland doesn't have a lot of money.
Well, and Tampa and Baltimore have to play each other here starting tonight.
Right, they have to play each other. But, I mean, doggone Oakland. Again, they have pitching. I mean, we talk about the Nationals. Oakland's third in the majors in team ERA. Okay? They are fourth in the majors as a pitching staff in batting average against. Ninth in quality starts. Third in whip. I mean, they are just a well-pitched, that's a good-looking staff that they have. You know, they don't have a 20-game winner. But this Tommy Malone, good pitcher. Now, of course, they lost Bartolo Colon. Believe it or not, Colon leads them in ERA. Do you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Grant Balfour's had a great year out of the bullpen. And they've used him in a wide variety of situations. Balfour is not just a closer. I mean, he's not just a closer. They have brought him in a wide variety of situations. I mean, he has 15 holds and 17 saves. Same thing, you know, with Ryan Cook, for example. Ryan Cook was a guy they've used in a variety. They just don't just settle in on one guy.
Did they make any? I don't think they made any really big trade deadline moves, did they?
No.
I was trying to think if they what they would have done, but I couldn't remember anything.
No, they're just a good, solid team. That's what they are. Hey, Jared Parker, good year, 10-8. Tommy Malone, good year, 12-10. Because Cologne's out of it now. So they had to turn to some other guys. And of course, the tough part, the injury to Brandon McCarthy. No, but they're just a good looking baseball team. They just do things right. Now, I mean, are they a great hitting team? No, they're not a great hitting team. But Cespedes, Josh Reddick, not bad. Mike in Winfield's with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Steve. I was calling. I heard yesterday you mentioned briefly about Paul Jones practicing at tight end.
Yeah.
And wide out.
Yep.
And basically, they're all competitors, and he wants to try to get himself on the field.
Right.
But I don't understand, say, long-term, how that benefits the team by taking him out of the quarterback spot.
Well, you know what, Mike? Let's start with the basics. He's 258 pounds. I mean, he's big. And what I've watched him at quarterback... He made strides in the spring. The first 10 days of the spring, Mike, he did okay, and no better than okay. The last 20 days of the spring, he made some strides, seemed to make some plays, get into what was going on. I'll be honest with you, Mike, he hasn't made a lot of strides at quarterback in the preseason.
Okay,
well.
Where
he did okay, Stephen Bench actually outplayed him. So it's my understanding, Mike, that Paul went to Bill and told Bill he'd like to try it. He actually volunteered for it.
Right. Well, but aren't we supposedly a little deep at tight end position without adding Paul to the mix?
That's a very good point you're making. But he also brings a different kind of athlete to the spot. And because Paul Jones can really run. You know, Layman's not bad when he runs. James isn't bad when he runs. Kyle Carter definitely can run. Gilliam's okay when he runs. Jones brings a little more burst at that spot if they want to go to him. And you can go to him in specific spots. And he also is not completely out of the quarterback mix. He is not completely out of it.
No, I would say he'd be your, like, panic type of guy if number one and number two goes down.
But there's also spots in the red zone where he could also be effective, too. Keep that, just file that away.
Okay.
You know, there's a certain package of plays that a long time ago they had put in for him that he can run.
All right.
So it's not completely out of it, but McGloin's your quarterback, Bench is your two, and Paul, who was mechanical with it last week, because he started out on Monday last week running this F spot. It was far more instinctive when I watched him go through it yesterday.
Okay. So there's a possibility we might see a little bit of him in the game this week.
I think the door is open to him playing a little bit in the game this week. And I also thought it was interesting that they changed his number. I'm wondering if at some point he gets himself onto special teams, because that's the only reason they would change a guy's number. Stephen Obeying Archibong and Jones both wear number 7. Well, they changed Jones to 13, which was actually, believe it or not, is his original number.
Okay.
He's now been 13, 3, 7, and back to 13 again. So we'll see. I thought it was an interesting move, but it was also one where I thought that he wanted to get on the field so much. It's my understanding he volunteered.
Oh, well, that's good, again, because, you got to look to the present as well as the future, and obviously we got to get off the snide here, and then I think you'll see momentum and confidence and everything else go up, and I personally thought they played a much better second game. Yes, there's still room for improvement, but you could definitely see that there was improvement between game one and game two.
No doubt.
Which was encouraging. and, you know, get a win or two behind them, and we'll see what happens.
What they need right now, Mike, is they need to win a game for a couple of reasons. Confidence and to validate the hard work and emotion they put into this thing.
Exactly. It's to hear your first hour of the program.
Mike, it might have been the best hour we've done in months.
Probably. Was there any discussion?
Now, the holder part is secure. It's going to be Roman.
Claps is being kind. But
he's going to be the holder. Now, other spots, you know, especially considering the bottom of the hour news with Sarah Bartlett on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza would like to give you some advice on your next used vehicle purchase. There are many dealers offering $2,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade, or a minimum of $3,000 for your dollars too much for their vehicle. At Sunbury Motors, we have the lowest price promise on pre-owned vehicles. We research the market and make sure our prices are the lowest of any similar vehicle within a 50-mile radius from a franchise dealer. We also put our used vehicles through a stringent 135-point inspection, making sure you're getting a quality vehicle. So don't be fooled by the smoke and mirrors from these screaming dealers offering unrealistic trade offers. Visit Sunbury Motors online at www.sunburymotors.com, or better yet, come in and see that every pre-owned vehicle is clearly marked with our lowest price promise. Sunbury Motors, proudly serving Central PA for almost a century. And remember, always ask for a Carfax.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us here at the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Humbles Wharf. And the Lenape Solar Hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Ken Watololo, the head football coach at Navy, joins us tomorrow on the Lenape Solar Hotline at 1-800-795-9565. We'll have a conversation with the head coach at Navy tomorrow. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com joins us on Thursday. So we have plenty of going on the next couple of days, and we'll also have Navy's play-by-play voice on Thursday's show as well. So we have a lot cooking, and hopefully you can get involved with us right now at 1-800-795-9565. We'll answer whatever questions you want. Bill O'Brien at his press conference earlier today. This day in sports history, insert sponsor here. 1912, Eddie Collins, Philadelphia A's, stole six bases against the Detroit Tigers. 1926, the United States won a seventh consecutive Davis Cup in tennis. In 1943, the NHL approved the Hockey Hall of Fame. The official building for the Hockey Hall of Fame was not open until August 26, 1961, on the grounds of the Canadian National Exhibition. Also in 1946, the Brooklyn Dodgers and Cincinnati Reds play to a scoreless tie in 19 innings. 1951, Florence Chadwick became the first woman to swim the English Channel in both directions. 1956, Frank Robinson of the Cincinnati Reds tied a rookie record for most home runs in a season when he hit his 38th of the year. 1959, Elroy Face. The Pirates ended a 22-game personal winning streak. He finished the season 18-1. 1974, the Cardinals and Mets set a National League record when they played 25 innings. It was the second-longest game in professional baseball history. 1985, Pete Rose achieved hit number 4,192 to break the record held by Ty Cobb. 1987, Howard Johnson of the Mets became the first National League infielder to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in the same season. And in 1999, Brett Favre and Robert Brooks of the Packers completed a 99-yard TD reception against the Bears to tie an NFL record. I believe the Eagles, Mike Quick, also was one of the co-record holders of that. I think Mike Barilla threw that, didn't he? Something like that.
Sure.
What?
You expect me to remember that? I can barely remember my name.
Sorry. My apologies. Yeah. Sorry.
It's all right.
Yours begins with an H.
Still have the poll question up. Replacement West.
Pass. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. Look, back to the poll question. They're not missed. Look, you have to understand who you are. All right? You have to understand who you are. Are they important? Yes. Are they essential to the game? Well, yeah, you need referees, but are these guys? I don't know.
You know, I found something, speaking of the NFL, that I thought that was really interesting and I wanted to share. Rex Ryan, it's one of my favorite topics, by the way. He was talking about the front page of the New York Post last Tuesday, showing himself, Mark Sanchez, and Tebow as circus clowns. And he said, it seems that's how people look at us. Well, yes, they do, because he's created that. Am I wrong with that?
No, they've created that.
I mean, that's what you've created
about.
All
started with the Hard Knocks thing. Yeah.
You got to take the good. When you want to be in the spotlight all the time, the good and the bad are coming with it.
Right.
Now, was it great that the Jets, you know, scored more points than they ever have in an opener? Yeah, it was, especially after the preseason that they had. But, you know, there's a reason people look at you like you're a circus. And that's why they're made right. fun of, because you open the door to it.
Right. You do open it. You do open it, no doubt. And they've done it. They've done that. And it, you know, it goes back to the Hard Knocks thing. That's an issue. Now, Tyler Nichol wrote this on SBNation.com, whatever. Put a lot of stock in SB Nation, but we'll do it. We'll do this anyway because it fits in with what you're talking about. It says, just 1 week into the season, we're already griping about officiating the NFL. During last weekend's game between Cardinals and Seahawks, the referees made a plethora of mistakes, one of which almost cost Arizona the game. Refs seemed confused throughout the match, huddling together for long spans to determine the calls that needed to be made. For the NFL, this shows poorly on their judgment. It has become obvious that having former Division III college officials call pro games a bit daunting task for them. That's why the league needs to go ahead and cough up the money and get the regulars back. Let's look at what happened. Almost set the fans into an uprising. Receiver Doug Baldwin, Seahawks injured after dropping a potential touchdown pass. Seahawks, no timeouts left. Call one. Anyhow, to get their injured man off the field. Although the clock stopped, the timeout would have been taken from the team to get their injured player, but the Seahawks technically had used three timeouts already. A runoff should have been put into effect instead of the refs granted Seattle a fourth timeout, which did happen. That's true. They did foul that up. Not only did they get an additional timeout, but the refs huddled for what seemed like 20 minutes to figure it all out. After discussing the issue with one another, they deemed that a play earlier resulting in another injured Seattle player did not take a timeout away since the clock was stopped. So, in essence, they got a freebie. Luckily, the Cardinals went on to win the game with a spectacular red zone defense, but it could have been ugly after the game. The head referee finally acknowledged his mistake and apologized for the unjust ruling. These are the type of things the league cannot afford to deal with. Their popularity is an all-time high. Why mess with that by not paying the normal referees what they've asked for? I understand the idea of bargaining, but there comes a point where you have to think about the future of the league with less qualified replacements. One of these games, the refs will make a huge mistake. It'll inevitably cost someone the game. That is when the fans are going to throw a fit, and that's when the NFL is going to have a real issue on their hands. Might be right. Might be right that it'll get to that, but I'm telling you right now, nothing's happened. That happened. Did it change the outcome of the game? No. Could have, yeah. mean, I'm, you know, and I know that you, you know, that you miss Walt Anderson. And
again, I'm not saying they did a terrible job.
He misses you too, by the way.
I don't think they did a bad job. I'm just saying, you know, and maybe, as I said last hour, maybe it's because of the broadcasters doing the game being more aware of replacement officials, or me being aware of more replacement officials. I saw more things missed or kind of messed up a little bit than I would have if the regular officials win. Now, does that mean they did a worse job or they had more mistakes? Probably not. It probably means I was just more aware of it than I would have been normally.
I'll be honest with you. I'm aware it's not them because that's not Mike Carey making the call. I'm aware it's not them because, Ed Hockley's not making the call. I understand that. I'm aware of it because I think Gene Steratore is great. Right, and I personally know Gene, and I think Gene's a great basketball official, and I think he's an outstanding NFL official. Okay, and I know Gene personally. I knew his, you know, knew his dad, and I think his brother Tommy officiates as well. Tommy Steratore, like a back judge or something like that. Now, do I want to see these guys back out there? Yes. But do I think they overplayed their hand? Yeah. I mean, could it possibly cost somebody a game? Sure. But, you know, you do have, in the end, now the timeout thing you can't check, okay? But, I mean, you know, look, you do miss Bill Levy. You miss Ron Winter. You miss Walt Coleman. You miss Jeff Triplett. You miss Mike Carey, you miss Terry McCauley, you miss Ed Hockley. They're good referees. Right? But again, you can't overplay your hand. You have to know what your place in the league is.
Let's look back at the timeout in the Seattle game, though. Why couldn't they have... Why wasn't somebody, the replay official, the evaluator, or whatever, whoever they have upstairs... that's kind of guiding the officials right now. Why couldn't they have stepped in and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, this can't be a timeout. Here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to run time off the clock. You're going to have a 15-yard penalty, whatever. Why couldn't that have been somewhat fixed? That's what I don't get.
Don't know. I mean, you can go to the play-by-play count. You know, they actually have a sheet. They keep the entire time up there. They would have told them what it was. NBC Sports article on it. Let's see. NFL Referees Association, will they resume their discussions? If they will, it hasn't happened yet. League sources tell that there are no developments in the negotiations. No surprise, both sides are waiting for the other side to blink, and both sides are likely trying to convince themselves that the other side should be blinking. From the perspective of the locked-out officials, the replacements stink. One source on the regular official side of the equation said that Sunday night's game between the Steelers and Broncos would have resulted in 30 downgrades of the officiating crew. The source said that typically there are roughly 3 total downgrades per game. From the NFL's perspective, it doesn't matter. The replacement officials look the part, act the part, sound the part. That's what the league was looking for when locating potential replacement officials. After a shaky preseason, that's what the NFL has now. It's all about how the games look on TV. If the officials look and act the same, fans don't care. Voila. The league also has identified the perfect PR strategy for dealing with mistakes. The regular officials make mistakes too, as NBC officiating consultant Jim Doblos pointed out on Monday night's Pro Talk, a crew of regular officials gave a team a 4th timeout in 2009. Uh-oh. Like the replacements did for the Seahawks on Sunday. Uh-oh. So, unless and until the replacements find a new and innovative way to screw up, and if the mistake directly affects the outcome of a game, it will be hard for locked-out officials to gain any leverage. Even then, it may not happen. The NFL has become very good at circling the wagons. The NFL will only have to alter its formation if and when the arrows are being fired from inside the circle. And if the NFL successfully keeps a muzzle on key personnel, we'll never know that it's happening.
Well, key personnel probably has to do with a lot of the head coaches.
Right, which who can be fined, by the way.
Right, and that's exactly right.
Okay, we've talked about this. How many calls have we had about this topic?
None.
The fans don't care. I think they like listening to us talk about it and give our opinions about it, but they don't care. Because, again, it's going along fine. Are there missed calls? Yeah. Is there an occasional screw-up? Yeah. Did the officials miss a timeout in the 2009 game? Yeah. They make mistakes, but they're backed up by replay, which is huge. Do not discount that part. Every turnover, every touchdown automatically reviewed, plus, of course, as we all know, several other things.
Well, in that Sunday night game, the Dwyer touchdown that was called back, I don't think that, I'll be honest with you, I don't think a regular official would have made that call that way. However, I thought that the official that did make the touchdown call made the right choice simply because every touchdown is reviewed. So if you call it a touchdown, it gets reviewed and it's seen that it's not a touchdown, nobody's hurt. If you don't call it a touchdown and you watch it on replay and see that it was a touchdown, that's when somebody's hurt. So I think they have done a nice job of training the officials on how to avoid major missed calls.
Look,
and use it to use replay to their advantage.
Replay is the eighth official. You know, it's not a crutch. It's the eighth official. And it allows you to correct potential mistakes. Now, I think the college way of doing it's better. But still. I mean, it's only week one. But I didn't see anything in the last two preseason games or this week that made me sit back and go, oh, we need those guys back. Now, I think officiating is an extremely hard job. The game is fast. It's lightning fast. And I talk to the Big Ten referees all the time, and I talked to Bill Carollo just last week about some stuff. I like talking with Bill Carollo very much. I think highly intelligent, thoughtful. He quizzes his guys all the time. They get quizzes every week. They get graded every week. I mean, the integrity of the game is critical, whether it's college or pro. The integrity is critical. And look, the NFL's well aware of, even though they may be loudly against it, but they know money's being placed on games. And, of course, legally it's being done in Vegas. Wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Kevin Herr, pro referee.
I like that idea, though.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like you have to. You could be a referee in the lingerie league and the arena football. That's all you have to be a replacement official, right?
You have to remember that. They're part-time employees.
Well, listen, six figures for a part-time job, I'm all for that.
No kidding.
Matter of fact, maybe you should look into it, too. I mean, think about it.
Sure.
Although I did have somebody say that one thing that did make sense. Imagine being a replacement official and, you know, Ben Roethlisberger comes up to you and says, and I'm just picking him out of there because it was the first name in my head, comes up to you and says, oh, by the way, he was grabbing a hold of my face mask, and that was roughing the passer. And you're like, yeah, maybe you're right, Ben. There is there is that idol factor.
Yeah, to a point. I just think these guys are trying to work so hard to do this job. Like, I know, realize they're being looked at as scabs, but the fans don't look at it that way. They don't care. They're asking too much.